Good morning, Mendocino. This is Jeff Blankfort, welcoming you to the November 23rd edition of Takes on the World, a public affairs program that comes your way the second and fourth Wednesdays of every month, and every other fifth Wednesday when I open the phones to you, our listeners. The first bombs America had barely dropped over Baghdad in 2003, before the same folks who had been calling for that war and took public credit for doing so, set their gun sights on an even bigger target, Iran. Their excuse? That what they claimed to be Israel's nuclear weapons program presented an existential threat to the future of Israel. That Israel's existing stock of what is estimated to be several hundred nuclear weapons might represent an existential threat not only to the region, but to the future of the planet, was not mentioned nor considered. This time, it was not just the neocons and their project for a new American century that became engaged in the warmongering, but virtually the entire American Jewish establishment, together with its allies in Washington's leading think tanks, among the syndicated national media, and of course Fox News. While a number of them, such as Senator Joe Lieberman and former UN Ambassador John Bolton, have repeatedly called for bombing Tehran's nuclear facilities, the line that most of the individuals and groups take is that, quote, "The military option cannot be taken off the table," end quote. But they all agree on the bottom line. Iran cannot be allowed to develop a nuclear weapon. No ifs, ands, or buts. Indeed, just yesterday, the Washington Institute for Near East Policy, which was spawned by AIPAC, the only registered Israel lobby back in 1985, for times such as these, produced two op-ed pieces expressing that very thing. The first came from Michael Eisenstadt, from the Washington Institute's director of the Military and Security Studies Program, who opened his article in the pro-Israel U.S. News and World Report by writing, quote, "Military action is a last resort, but for nuclear diplomacy to succeed, Tehran must believe that if it tries to build a bomb, the United States will undertake military action to disrupt such an effort." Then we have David Makovsky, director of the Institute's Project on the Middle East Peace Process, and a former guest on this program, who wrote on the group's website that, quote, "Although Israel's in favor of an economic and diplomatic sanctions against Iran, its calculus is also based on how much time is left for military strikes to be effective." He then went on to note that, quote, "In a revealing interview with CNN last weekend, Israeli Defense Minister Ehud Barak hinted that Israel and the world may reach the limit of their capacity to effectively strike Iran's nuclear facilities within as little as 6 months. His comments suggest," writes Makovsky, "that unless additional international sanctions deter Tehran's nuclear efforts, Israel is increasingly likely to opt for a military option while it still can," end quote. These comments come in the wake of a much-leaked and overhyped report from the International Atomic Energy Agency that Iran may be further on the path to being able to build a nuclear weapon than before, but which offered no concrete proof that it was doing so. It also follows the arrest of an Iranian-American who has been charged with being an Iranian agent and attempting to get the leading Mexican drug cartel to sneak across the border and assassinate the Saudi ambassador to the U.S. by blowing up his favorite D.C. restaurant while he was dining there. Despite the fact that this scenario, the latest sting created by President Obama's Justice Department, has more holes in it than Swiss cheese, and no evidence has yet been presented in court, the bomb Iran crowd is acting as if the charges have been proven, and some are demanding the U.S. government treat the event as an act of war. It was no comfort to read a report by the Bloomberg news agency in Israel's Haaretz last Wednesday, in the midst of this, that the U.S. Air Force has received new 30,000-pound bombs capable of destroying deep underground bunkers. The bombs, designed to be delivered by B-2 stealth bombers, quote, "will meet requirements for the current operational need," end quote, U.S. Air Force spokesman Lieutenant Colonel Jack Miller said in a statement to Bloomberg. The U.S. Air Force reportedly started receiving the bombs in September. They are reportedly six times bigger than the U.S. Air Force's current bunker busters. According to the Bloomberg report, Boeing received a $32 million contract in August for 8 of the bombs. That's $4 million a bomb. Isn't it comforting to know what this administration's priorities are? Then, of course, we had last night's Republican roadshow, in which, apart from Congressman Ron Paul's lone expression of sanity, we heard Mitt Romney pledging again to turn his Middle East policy over to Israel, and Newt Gingrich supporting an attack on Iran only, get this, only if it produces regime change. These are some of the things I'll be discussing at about 20 minutes past the hour with Phil Giraldi, a former analyst for the Central Intelligence Agency and currently president of the Council for National Interest in Washington, who has been following the subject very closely. Before I get Phil Giraldi on the phone, let's look at some other things that have been happening. Let's start with Egypt, where the Mubarak dictatorship had been taken down in February following massive public protests, only to be replaced by a military junta. Christian Science Monitor Christian Chick notes that, quote, the U.S. attempt to reposition itself as a supporter of democracy and human rights in the Middle East is being undermined by a growing Egyptian perception that Washington will back Egypt's military junta unreservedly despite its increasing repressiveness, end quote. That perception was reinforced on Monday when White House spokesman Jay Carney said the U.S. was, quote, deeply concerned about the violence and, quote, tragic loss of life, end quote, and called for, quote, restraint on all sides so that Egyptians can move forward together to forge a strong and united Egypt, end quote. That call for restraint on all sides in the face of excessive use of force by police and soldiers, which has taken the lives of 28 protesters, was met with incredulity in Cairo, writes Chick. On top of that, but not surprisingly, the tear gas used by Interior Ministry troops in Tahrir Square has been supplied by a U.S. company, according to the Guardian of London. Demonstrators say cartridges retrieved from the scene were branded with the name and address of Combined Systems Incorporated, which is located in Jamestown, Pennsylvania. It specializes in supplying what it calls crowd control devices to armies and, quote, homeland security agencies around the world, and has been the tear gas of choice for Israel in suppressing Palestinian protests in the West Bank. According to The Guardian, protesters say this CS gas seems more powerful than that used by Egyptian police during the popular uprising in February. Says one protester, it's stronger, it burns your face, it makes you feel like your whole body is seizing up. I guess that's what Hillary Clinton meant when she said that the new Egypt would provide expanded opportunities for American businesses. More trouble for the U.S. and Pakistan. The country's ambassador to the United States, Hukain Haqqani, has resigned 2 weeks after it was revealed that he had been behind a secret cable from the country's president, Asif Ali Zardari, to Admiral Mike Mullen, in which Zardari had offered to replace Pakistan's powerful military and intelligence leadership, the Inter Services Intelligence, or ISI, and cut ties with militant groups which the former Joint Chiefs chairman initially said he couldn't recall receiving. The secret back-channel memo was reportedly conveyed from Zardari to Mullen through Pakistani-American businessman Mansoor Ejaz. On learning of Mullen's denial, Ejaz responded in an article in a Pakistani newspaper in which he published extensive BlackBerry Messenger conversations with the Zardari-linked Pakistani official, allegedly Haqqani. Ejaz insisted the memo did in fact exist and that it was delivered to Mullen through another secret go-between, this one a senior U.S. government official. Quote, there can be no doubt a memorandum was drafted and transmitted to Admiral Mullen with the approval of the highest political level in Pakistan, and that the admiral received it with certainty from a source whom he trusted and who also trusted me, end quote, Ejaz wrote. That led Mullen's spokesman to acknowledge that the memo did exist, that he did receive it, but that, quote, he did not find it at all credible and took no note of it then or later. Therefore, he addressed it with no one, end quote. Haqqani reportedly is not linked in any way with the Haqqani Network, Washington's latest Southeast Asian boogeyman. 2 weeks ago, on my last program, I reported on the efforts of the world's largest commercial retailer, Walmart, to expand its existing 109,000 square foot space in the Airport Boulevard Shopping Center by another 52,000 square feet and become a 24/7 full service market and liquor store, and how its efforts to do so have been aided without any public disclosure by C.B. Richard Ellis, the world's largest commercial real estate operator, and how the final environment impact report would be discussed and voted on that night by the Ukiah Planning Commission. As Justine Fredrickson of the Ukiah Daily Journal reported it, quote, after listening to a three-hour parade of comments both for and against the expansion of Walmart on Airport Park Boulevard Wednesday, the Ukiah Planning Commission delayed any official decision on the report. Both the project's final environmental impact report and site development permit were on the commission's meeting agenda, but after the commission heard from dozens of speakers given as much time as they desired, the commission ended the hearing at 10 p.m. and tabled the discussion until December 14th. "It is heartening to see so many people here," Planning Director Charlie Stump told the packed room. "This is a big project for the city and a controversial one," end quote. The room was certainly packed. At the time the meeting opened, there was hardly any empty seats. Not surprisingly, many of the others were filled with Walmart employees and their friends and family, most of whom seemed to be speaking from a simple set of talking points, which began with, quote, "I think that the final EIR is adequate," end quote. Steve Scalmanini, a co-host of KZYX's Corporations and Democracy, were later asked rhetorically when he spoke against the report how many of them had actually read the 468-page report. As the Daily Journal report noted, quote, "Many who spoke against the project said an expanded grocery section at Walmart would take so many customers away from other stores that it would likely cause some of them to close, such as, quote, sister stores Food Max on Airport Boulevard and Lucky in the Pear Tree Shopping Center." One of those who would be directly affected finally got her turn at the microphone. "I feel if you do the expansion, I will be out of a job and on the street corner with a sign," said Lucky employee Tara McMillan, who said she is a single mother struggling to make ends meet after her hours were already reduced from 40 a week to 25. There was one issue with which everyone who addressed it was in agreement. That was at the already congested 101 Talmadge Road Airport Boulevard interchange could not possibly handle the anticipated increase in traffic, and that while major improvements there have been contemplated, there is no funding for it in the pipeline, and none apparently was expected. The final environmental impact report had no answer for this either. If the city council, which has the last word, were to approve it, they would have to declare that, quote, "overriding considerations justify the approval of the project." In other words, that granting Walmart's expansion trumps everything else, the lost jobs, the closed markets, and the gargantuan traffic jams that will quickly ensue. It was seen to be a no-brainer. With 6 supermarkets already in the city and 2 offering groceries at a discount, the last thing Ukiah needs is another one, especially one whose predatory practices are well documented. And believe me, calling Walmart predatory may be understating the problem. On Monday, the California Watch website, a project of the Center for Investigative Reporting, had this depressing and frightening news. Quote, "In a push to expand across California without interference, Walmart is increasingly taking advantage of the state's initiative system to threaten elected officials with costly special elections and to avoid environmental lawsuits. The Arkansas-based retailer has hired paid signature gatherers to circulate petitions to build new superstores or repeal local restrictions on big box stores. Once 15% of eligible voters sign the petitions, state election law puts cash-strapped cities in a bind. City councils must either approve the Walmart draft and measure without changes or put it to a special election. As local officials grapple with whether to spend tens of thousands or even millions of taxpayers' dollars on such an election," reads the article, "Walmart urges cities to approve the petition outright rather than send it to the voters. While most development projects don't attract much controversy, Walmart has become a lightning rod almost everywhere it goes in California. Backers of organized labor have demonized the company for opposing unions and paying low wages, while other critics say its superstores cripple local businesses and increase sprawl. Now, Walmart's use of the initiative process has angered elected officials who say the company's political strategy effectively holds them hostage. They circumvented the system and blackmailed the town," said Rick Roel, a councilman in Apple Valley, where Walmart pushed through a superstore proposal in April. "We've had controversial projects, but we were never bullied like Walmart," he said. "The company has employed the same well-honed strategy across the state, from the Central Valley agricultural community of Kerman to the Silicon Valley suburb of Milpitas to the high desert town of Apple Valley, where the main street has a special crosswalk button for horse riders. Walmart has ramped up the campaign in the last year, pushing through 4 new superstore projects and fighting big box regulations in San Diego. The company spent $2 million on the effort, paying election lawyers, campaign consultants, and public relations firms. Well, that was from the California Watch article. Well, talk about the 1% versus the 99%. Occupy Ukiah is coordinating with Mendocino Solidarity in opposing the expansion of Ukiah Walmart, and they are calling for people to attend the next Ukiah Planning Commission meeting, which is Wednesday, December 14th at 6 p.m. in the City Council Chambers of 300 Seminary Avenue. We need your physical presence, their statement says. And if you're willing to comment, we need your voice. They add that if, quote, if you cannot attend the meeting, send an email with your comments addressed to the Planning Commission to kjordan@cityofukiah.com.